Welcome to Counterpoint. I'm Jonathan Chudaikin. France today has the largest Jewish and Muslim populations living side by side outside of Israel, sharing linguistic and cultural traditions and a common experience of displacement from North Africa, sometimes to the same neighborhoods in Paris or Marseille. Muslim-Jewish relations often gets recounted as a tale of sworn enemies, irreconcilable differences, and rising anti-Semitism. In her new book, Muslims and Jews in France, History of a Conflict, Maud Mandel, director of the program in Judaic Studies at Brown University, wants to help us understand how this narrative has come about. Maud Mandel will be in Memphis at Rhodes College on Monday, March 24th, and at Beth Shalom Synagogue on Tuesday, March 25th. She will take us behind the headlines. To help us add some historical depth to our understanding, I'm so happy to have Maud Mandel with me today on Counterpoint. Welcome, Maud.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Before we jump into Muslims and Jews in France, I want to talk about your approach to history more generally. Your first book was called In the Aftermath of Genocide, and there you looked at the ways in which the Armenian and the Jewish communities in France each responded to the experience of genocide. Now you're looking at Muslims and Jews. Why have you chosen to have as a mainstay of your historical work a comparative viewpoint when you study history? What's the difference that comparison makes to our understanding of the past?
Oh, great. Well, thank you so much for that question. So when I started doing my graduate work, I noticed most often that much of the historical scholarship on Jews was focused very singularly on them, that they were spoken about in a vacuum. And yet, Jews, wherever they live, with the exception of in Israel itself, are minorities in larger states. As a result, we're often going through what other groups were going through, what other minorities were going through in those states. And so I started to see comparing them as a way to get at what was unique about the Jewish experience, but was also more generalized to the context. And that, of course, is what comparison can bring. It tells us this, both the particular and the more general of a historical experience.
Do you think it's the case that you miss out on certain patterns if you aren't looking at things comparatively?
I do think so. And that was a lot of what pushed me to go in this direction, because sometimes when you read just about Jews or just about any group in history, what you think is very specific and distinctive to them turns out to be the product of a much broader set of circumstances.
In your latest book, it's not only that you're comparing Muslims and Jews, you also are comparing two different cities. So you're looking both at Paris and Marseille. Why these two cities, and what does the comparison between them help reveal?
Very often when you read French history, it's a story of Paris. I do often talk about Paris, and this is because France is a highly centralized state bureaucracy that is run out of Paris. It's where much of French cultural production comes from. And in the case of my study in particular, it's also the home to the largest Muslim and Jewish populations in France. If Paris is in one node of the study, Marseille is the place where many of the themes that I trace in the book play themselves out most dramatically. So Marseille, it was the port where French decolonization and Middle Eastern war, almost simply by its geography, almost had their most profound impact. And as France's largest port and its gateway to the Mediterranean, it had a what one might call a front row seat on the various crises in North Africa and the Middle East. And so it becomes for me in my study not so much a comparison. It's not so much that I'm comparing Marseille to Paris, but rather the site in France where some of the historical questions that interest me the most play themselves out most dramatically. And also, if I can just say one last thing about that, it's also the city in France where conflict has been at times the least evident, where Muslim and Jewish communities have gotten on quite well over time. And one of the questions that interests me in this book is how to explain that, as well as how to explain conflict.
And Marseille is the second largest community, both of Muslims and of Jews, and it's also the port city through which Jews and Muslims coming back from North Africa migrated to, correct?
Yes, and there are very substantial populations of both living there. Also, the geography of the city is very distinctive for France because there are many places where Muslims and Jews live really side by side, and most notably in Marseille, it's in the heart of the city center. So if you go to Paris, many of the Muslim populations, for example, are scattered into the periphery of the city and working class urban suburbs. But in Marseille, the central section of the city, which is right between the main port and the main train station, houses a very large immigrant community where both Muslims and Jews live.
Maud, Muslims and Jews in France is a really important book because it's the first major comparative history of these two communities, which are the largest communities of both Jews and Muslims in Europe. So what is it that you wanted to show readers in this book? What's the big argument of the book?
My interest in this project and what took me to it was, I think, what draws a lot of interest in the topic more generally, and that is that in 2000, there was a great outbreak of violence in France between Muslim and Jewish communities, mostly in these urban industrial suburbs that I was talking about, and directed from young Muslim, often children actually, or teenagers, directed at Jews in the local neighborhood. And so there was a lot of attention focused on the question of anti-Semitism in France, and new anti-Semitism or a new Judeophobia that had broken out in France. And what I wanted to do in my book was to think, to first of all, historicize that story. So I wanted to make clear that while 2000, something definitely happened and changed in 2000, that much of the origins for understanding it didn't jump out at that moment, but actually had a long lineage. And so the book really tries to show that. So that's one part. Big point that the book was trying to make, but also tries to make the case that antagonisms between Muslims and Jews, when they do break out, were more mutual, perhaps, than a focus on Muslim anti-Semitism suggests. So it talks also about Jewish attitudes towards Muslims. And moreover, I have a strong argument that I stress throughout the book that the Middle East, which we often think as the moment or the space that's pushing conflict between Muslims and Jews or Arabs and Jews wherever they live, is, while a part of this story, is actually not the most important or significant causal factor in understanding Muslim-Jewish conflict when it does emerge in France.
And that's because what is the key driver for you?
Well, for me, the key driver is France itself and the French colonial project and its aftermath. Built into that, how the deconstruction of the French Empire created new pathways for Muslims and Jews, often former colonial subjects and citizens, who then migrated to France to make their way into the state. And what I'm interested in is exploring the ways in which integration into the polity differed so dramatically between them, and thereby shaping their relationships with each other.
So a big part of what you're saying is that the Arab-Israeli conflict is not just playing out on the streets of Paris or in Marseille. This isn't just a conflict between Muslims and Jews that's a sort of a trans-historical enmity between these groups, but it's really connected to very specific politics on the ground and as they've taken place over time. Let's dig into that in more detail. Maud, your book is structured around a series of episodes where the conflict between Muslims and Jews erupts, and you open it with a chapter focused on Marseille in 1948, just as the State of Israel was created. You show in this chapter, and I'm quoting you here, disagreements over Palestine were rarely ever only about Palestine. So if Muslims and Jews weren't fighting only about Israel and Palestine, as you've already said, tell us a little bit more about why they were fighting in 1948, and what forms did that conflict take?
The case I'm trying to make about 1948, but also about 1967 and other moments of explosive conflict in the Middle East around Israel and Palestine, is that while those do play a part in all places, I'm not trying to say that is irrelevant to the story I'm telling, but rather that often that the struggles that break out around those events in Paris, in Marseille, become ways in which the Muslim and Jewish activists who are clashing start to make a case about other issues that are more pressing and more important to them. So specifically in 1948, what interests me is the ways in which conversations about struggles over the war in Israel become a way for local activists to make a case for their own positionality in France itself and in the polity. So, for example, Muslim activists who make the case that in supporting Israel, the French state is supporting Jewish immigrants in France when they, Muslim citizens, as granted by the French colonial establishment, should be having greater access to determining national and foreign policy. And so it's not to say that the Middle East is irrelevant, but the Middle East becomes a way for them to make assertions of claims for political recognition in the French state.
What were the kinds of issues where Muslims explicitly were responding to that set of concerns playing themselves out?
So a lot of the story, it's worth noting that in 1948, the only conflicts that broke out in France at all between Muslims and Jews were only in Marseille. It's in the places where most Muslims and Jews resided, largely in Paris, there were virtually none. But in Marseille, the antagonisms break out around specifically the passage of arms and bodies, that is, Jewish refugees, going to fight in the war through the ports of Marseille. And so their movements are extremely visible to Muslim dock workers who are living in the region. Those become the episodes around which encounter and often conflict break out.
And in this particular period, I mean, it is pretty clear the French state is siding with Israel. It's the largest military supplier to Israel up through 1967, right?
Yes, quite right. The Muslim activists who were complaining about this were absolutely right to note that, although the French state was claiming neutrality in these early years.
So as we get more into the content of the book, we have to put it into some context. We have to remember, for example, that the creation of Israel was part of the post-war breaking up of the French and the British empires. You know, half the states in the United Nations were created between 1945 and 1990. France, in this context, had the second largest empire after England, and it included much of North Africa. In 1956, France's North African colonies of Morocco and Tunisia became independent, and then after a brutal war, Algeria followed suit. Now, most Moroccan and Tunisian Jews, when they emigrated before 1967, ended up in Israel, although large numbers went to France. 90% of the Algerian Jews returned to France, where they already had French citizenship. And I'm giving this background to indicate that there are a lot of different historical forces that are at work. But to simplify many things going on in your book into a nutshell, the story about conflict between Jews and Muslims really begins with the migration patterns during decolonization between 1954 and 1962, where you show that certain key figures, French officials, representatives from international Jewish organizations, and Algerian nationalist spokesmen, begin to speak more often about conflict and acrimony between these communities. Unpack this for us. What are you trying to show here?
The main point that I'm trying to make around this story is that various types of political actors, and you named some of them, international Jewish representatives, North African Muslim, start to create what I call a North African Jewish story. In other words, they start to see the separate Jewish communities of North Africa, Algerian, Moroccan, and Tunisian, or you could even argue the various subset communities in those, as part of a rather larger coherent whole who are in conflict with their neighbors. And there are a lot of reasons why that's been granted in 1948. And so their focus is very much on the Jewish future and on the recent Jewish past in Europe, which is a very violent one. And this is just one piece of the story I'm telling, but again, it's just an example to show how the various political actors that I'm tracing start telling a story of Jewish-Muslim conflict that in some ways is actually divorced from the reality on the ground.
That gives us some clue of the way in which Jewish spokespeople are beginning to construct this narrative of conflict and danger for Jews. What about some of the North African nationalist spokespeople? Because on the one hand, it seems to be the case that they're claiming that Jews ought to be staying in Algeria, for example. if they are going to be true patriots. And the very fact that they're leaving indicates something about their being traitors. It becomes this ambivalent discourse. Talk a little bit more about some of the kinds of things that they said as representatives of their community.
Yes, wonderful. So the various nationalist activists, very often, as you noted, in their public discourse about Jews, are quite inclusive of Jews. They don't talk about them specifically initially as enemies in any sense. Rather, they say, as Moroccans or Algerians or Tunisians, you are a member of the nation and we welcome you and expect you to be part of this territory that you have been part of for centuries. But it is also true, and this is the subtle sort of contradictory aspect of some of their arguments, that as Jews start to migrate, some members of these nationalist parties, and particularly when Jews migrate, as they are in this case almost entirely in the early years of decolonization to Israel, some of these nationalist parties start to construct Jews as traitors to the nationalist cause. And in some ways, the worst traitors in their mind, because in fact they have been constructing Jews as part of the nation. So these aren't Europeans who are leaving, but rather indigenous Algerians or indigenous Moroccans and Tunisians, as they've been constructed in nationalist rhetoric. And so the very act of their departure suggests that they are, suggests for some at least, that they are traitors. And then that language of abandonment gets wound into the political discourses about where Jews fit into the nationalist movement. It's never one way. They're saying both things at the same time, that Jews are part of the nations and traitors to it.
So it sounds like, in actuality, a big part of your story is about how it is that a story about Jews and Muslims inexorably in conflict with one another emerges over time, and in a sense, how that narrative itself constructs some of the conflict. If you're just tuning in, I'm Jonathan Judaikin, and you're listening to Counterpoint. I'm speaking today with Maud Mandel, author of Muslims and Jews in France, The History of a Conflict. Maud, I felt like the key chapter in the book was your middle chapter on encounters in the metropole, because it showed how the social conditions of life for Jews and Muslims help set them on a collision course. It's not just the discourse, in other words. They often emigrated from the same places in Algiers or Tunis to Paris or Marseille, but they came with a differing status as citizens, often from different social classes, with different kinds of education, and into frameworks very differently set up to receive them as migrants. So in the 1950s and 1960s, what did Muslims and Jews share in their experience of displacement? But also, what differed in their experience once they arrived to their new neighborhoods in France?
So in terms of the question of what they shared, and you highlighted some of these, there are some very profound connections between and among these migrants. For starters, they often shared language. Many of the migrating Jews were French speakers, but also many, if not most, in the initial migrant waves spoke Arabic. They share a cultural past, coming from the same cities and rural, sometimes rural areas of North Africa. And of course, they share an experience of displacement. And there's plenty of evidence, particularly in the initial waves of migrants who end up settling. There's a very significant post-war housing crisis in France. And so when the first migrants start coming from North Africa into Marseille and Paris and other places, they're very often living close to one another. And there's plenty of evidence that their interactions in these neighborhoods are convivial, precisely because they share more than divides them. They are of different religious backgrounds, but besides that, they have more in common with each other than they often do with the French citizens, native French population in which they're placed or among whom they're living.
You talk about these neighborhoods in which people are eating this, they're looking for the same food, they oftentimes are smoking together, sharing coffee. I mean, it's that level of conviviality. It's sort of a hearkening back to this old world that they both came from and that they both shared.
Precisely. And I think one can speak quite comfortably of friendship. These are not divided communities. They live amongst each other. Jews had access to jobs, occupational opportunities, and a certain even preference in housing that ends up placing them in a position that is far more stable than that of the Muslim migrating in the same time that are who are often channeled into unskilled labor work and whose status is far less protected. So the housing is a really good example. I mentioned that the housing crisis in post-war France meant that Muslims and Jews were often initially living together, and that's true. But very quickly, the French government engages in a widespread frenzy of building activity, which with housing projects that are dedicated largely to European repatriates from North Africa. And Jews, as citizens of Algeria, are considered part of that European group.
And the other big thing that you talk about is, of course, the Jewish community inside France has established all of these communal groups in order to engage in forms of self-help for these new migrants, which they're very committed to in the aftermath of the Holocaust. The Muslim population, on the other hand, had very little communal infrastructure. So again, they're just sort of, they're abandoned by the state and they don't have an infrastructure in their own communities in order to deal with all of the problems that migrants have to undergo. Now, in the story that you tell, the late 1960s was an important turning point in this relationship. It's neatly summed up in one of your chapter's subtitles, which reads, Radical Politics and Hardening Ethnic Allegiances. Tell us a little bit about the role that the Six-Day War in June 1967, and then the radical student revolts in May-June of 1968. 68 was, of course, a global phenomenon, but in France, it almost toppled the government. It was the biggest strikes ever in French history. What do those two back-to-back episodes result in?
That moment is a moment, and this is well known in the historiography, where French Jews become, and not just French Jews, Jews in many places, become very publicly pro-Zionist in ways that they hadn't been in the past, raising enormous sums of money, holding very public rallies, some folks even opting at that moment to try to migrate to Israel to help in the war effort, which ends too quickly so that they can't, but there's a real impetus for that kind of what one scholar has called the Zionization of French Jewry. And I had always assumed this would be a moment of profound conflict with the growing North African Muslim population, which was there as well. But in fact, what I learned was 67, while not insignificant in a growing conflictual story, was actually not a great moment of conflict. The Muslim North African population, while perhaps identifying with the Palestinians more than they ever had previously, were not dramatically driven to engage in the kinds of political activism that Jews were engaged in, except in one key place, I should say, which was French campuses. On some campuses or in universities where there were some Muslim North African students taking courses and some occasionally Palestinian students who were also there, some activism and some conflict with Jewish students in those universities broke out, but it was sporadic and not very significant. And this is part of my larger argument that it's not really the Middle East that drives, or at least not the Middle East alone, that drives a greater conflictual encounter between these two populations. Rather, it's in 1968, at the moment of a tremendous political upheaval that took place with student uprisings in that period, that university campuses became hotbeds of French radical culture and spaces in which very radical pro-Palestinian activism begins to take root that is directed against also this now very mobilized Jewish population that had become so fascinated with the Middle East in 1967.
And you continue that story up through and into the 1980s, in which you begin to have the forging of anti-racist coalitions in the 1980s, in a period in which the Front National, the National Front Party, is really beginning to gain its first electoral victories on the municipal level, and in which you're also having outbreaks of overt anti-Semitism for the first time since the Second World War. We can't go into the details of that because I really want to make sure that we telescope forward to the contemporary period and have you tell us a little bit about what's going on now. More, you know, it seemed like not long ago, when France was in the newspaper, it almost always focused on the legislation about not wearing a hijab or headscarf in certain public places. The last year things have turned. The news has been about the reverse gesture of the Heil Hitler, known as the Quenelle by the comedian Dieudonné, which seems to have gone viral, and also a protest march that just took place within the last month or so, termed the Jour du Colère, made up of members of the right and the far right, and including some Muslims, which just paraded through the streets of Paris chanting, "Death to the Jews." What's going on in the relationship between Muslims and Jews in France? Or is part of the point of your book that maybe that's the wrong question to ask because it already sets up the issue as one between Muslims and Jews when a big part of the history that you're telling insists that we have a more complicated and nuanced and historically, contextually specific version of the way this plays out?
In some ways, the answer is both. So on the one hand, by the end of my book, which actually ends just before the outbreak of some of the conflicts that precede the ones you're talking about now, in 2000, the conclusion is actually relatively pessimistic, because one of the points of the book is to show just how powerful discourses of polarization have been, so that even when people on the ground, as it were, are getting along just fine in these some of these neighborhoods I've described, or in other arenas of life, the fact that increasingly the media, French officials, spokespeople from each of these different populations start speaking of polarization. In some ways, that frames the only way that we can think about or see what's going on. And that's all the more true, I think, since 2000, when really one of the only things we hear coming out of France is the story of mounting anti-Semitism, conflict between these two populations. It's very, very difficult to see any other reality when that's the story that's being told, and quite telling the story that way then convinces the subjects themselves that they are, in fact, in a polarized or conflictual situation.
Maud, I'm so grateful to you because I really feel like you've given us a life lesson. You've helped us to understand that if we're going to understand the headlines, it doesn't matter which headlines, but in this particular case, headlines that are coming out of France, we can't really do that unless we have some historical knowledge to get behind the headlines. And that when it comes to the issues of Muslims and Jews in the world, this is perhaps more important than even in some other framework. So thanks so much for being with us today on Counterpoint to give us this perspective.
Thank you so much. It's been a great pleasure.
Maud Mandel will be in Memphis at Rhodes College on Monday, March 24th, and at Beth Shalom Synagogue on Tuesday, March 25th, to lecture and answer questions and sign her new book, Muslims and Jews in France, History of a Conflict, helping put a spotlight on the role of scholars, academics, and intellectuals, and how their work illuminates the issues we face locally and globally. Counterpoint is a monthly broadcast on WKNO FM. To listen to this show in its entirety, visit WKNOFM.org and click on the news menu item where you'll find a link to Counterpoint. You can podcast Counterpoint by visiting iTunes and searching for WKNO Counterpoint. Counterpoint is a production of WKNO FM in association with the Spence L. Wilson Chair in Humanities at Rhodes College. Justin Willingham produces the show. I'm Jonathan Judakin. Thanks for listening.